And we want to spend a few minutes today on the mounting legal battles faced by billionaire members of the Sackler family, owners of Purdue Pharma, which makes the highly addictive opioid medication OxyContin. They're being accused of helping to start the opioid crisis and then looking to profit from it by now providing addiction recovery, becoming an end-to-end pain provider, according to one document from the company filed in a complaint from New York's Attorney General. That complaint names individual members of the Sackler family as defendants and accuses some of shifting hundreds of millions of dollars from the company to themselves through a web of offshore entities. There are 1,600 other lawsuits against opioid manufacturers from cities, counties, states, and Native American tribes who say those companies aggressively marketed opioid painkillers and downplayed the risks. Herman Lopez is a senior correspondent for Vox. He covers opioid litigation. Hi, Herman.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us more first about Project Tango. This was the charge that Purdue sought to profit off addiction with treatments. A quote from a Project Tango document filed by New York's district attorney says that pain treatment and addiction are naturally linked, I guess like a couple dancing the tango. So tell us more about what we know the company said.
Sure. So the company, in essence, wanted to get into addiction treatment. And there's a really interesting graphic in this lawsuit that kind of shows like a funnel, which the top of the funnel is pain treatment and the bottom is opioid addiction treatment, which is interesting because it's kind of like a tacit admission that the higher use of opioids for pain treatment eventually can lead to addiction, which is something that Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers have kind of pushed back against before, that their opioids are leading to a lot of addiction and that they're partly to blame for the crisis.
Well, and a lot of this has been documented. In December 2016, Richard, Jonathan, and Mortimer Sackler discussed buying a company that used implantable drug pumps to treat opioid addiction. A lot of this is tracked through emails. We should say that 8 Sackler family members who are named as defendants in both the New York and Massachusetts filings said the lawsuits were filled with claims that are demonstrably false and unsupportable by the actual facts. But tell us more about this trail that district attorneys have of things the Sackler family, members of the Sackler family, have said.
Sure. So we've known generally for a while that there's this link. The first wave of the opioid epidemic was caused by the increased prescription of painkillers, and that led the drugs to proliferate all over the place, not just to patients, but also to people who bought the drugs from patients, got them from the black market, and so on and so forth. But in recent years, as people have investigated the causes of this, we've dug a little deeper into the Sackler family, because they are the main owners of Purdue Pharma, which produces OxyContin. So in recent years, we've seen essentially that like Purdue knew that a lot of this was going on, that as its product was getting out there, as OxyContin was getting out there, there was more misuse. But they started punting on it. They would say, well, this is the fault of people addicted or misusing the drug, and we should put this on them. And these reports are really showing that like they were kind of working around the crisis as it came, that they were ready not just to deny that their product was causing any harm and like kind of pushing back against that, but they were also preparing for this addiction treatment side where, as the opioid crisis was growing, they were ready to essentially offer addiction treatment if necessary.
Well, and has been reported, these new lawsuits are largely notable for the fact that they do provide the family's continued push to sell these opioids, even as it became a bigger crisis, and even after the 2007 plea deal that the family made. Some are asking, well, you know, what is the evidence that they knew that OxyContin was this dangerous? Much of the evidence is this 2007 plea deal in which they acknowledged that they misrepresented the drug's addictive qualities. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So in 2007, the company did actually have to settle with the federal government. It got fined by the federal government for around $650 million, and its executives, 3 executives, got fined as well. And they actually were criminally convicted and had to do like community time for this. Essentially, the charges were just that it had misrepresented its product and had tried to suggest that it was safer and more effective than it was. The thing with that is, since then, the company seemed to continue doing a lot of this marketing for opioid painkillers, and the charges now are, look, we're still seeing the results of that marketing as we see rising overdose deaths.
And you talked about some of the things that family members said. Richard Sackler, overdoses are spiraling out of control, and the early 2000s. He wrote an email in 2001 urging the company to blame the patients. We have to hammer on abusers in every way possible. They are the culprits and the problem. They are reckless criminals. In 2009, this is again 2 years after that federal guilty plea in 2007, 2011, family members, you know, really hammered the sales staff. How do we expand the market for these drugs to capture more cost-sensitive patients, people who were, you know, didn't have as much money? You know, this drug obviously meant a lot to this company, but as you said, this family has billions. I mean, is it kind of head-scratching as to why they weren't looking for a way to get out of the business of OxyContin?
I mean, they simply saw a lot of money in it. And I think one of the worst parts, this is in the Massachusetts lawsuit, which is a little further back, but it essentially found that Richard Sackler at the time was writing to another company executive, another person in the company, and arguing that maybe OxyContin should be advertised as a non-narcotic in other countries. And you can say whatever you want about OxyContin. Maybe at the time they really did think it was going to be safer and effective, but to suggest that it could possibly be advertised as a non-narcotic is just ridiculous. It's an opioid. It's a drug that carries addictive and misuse potential. It's strange to me. After in the 90s, there was a giant settlement with tobacco companies. And one of the things with that settlement is that a lot of the communications within tobacco companies were revealed, and there was like really damning information in that. It's strange to me that Purdue wouldn't see that and the Sacklers wouldn't see that and maybe try to be a little smarter about what they're saying in their emails. And overall, I honestly can't say why they didn't try to get out of this. Maybe their move to addiction treatment was their attempt to get out of this or get into another part of this business. But overall, it seems like they just saw a lot of money in this and kept pushing it.
Well, Herman Lopez, we know that there are real pain patients out there who are very concerned about this. They claim that OxyContin is a lifesaver for them, but we also know that Purdue has been sort of ginning that up. Putting that aside for a moment, what do you think happens here? Members of the Sackler family are expected to respond publicly this week to some of the accusations in the lawsuit from the state of Massachusetts. We know that Purdue settled the first of their lawsuits with the state of Oklahoma last week for $270 million. Denying wrongdoing, unlike 2007, that is not that much money for this family. What do you think happens here, that they just settle lawsuits and continue? Where do you think this goes?
So right now there are a few state lawsuits in play. I think the biggest lawsuit to watch that's relevant to this is in Cleveland right now. A federal judge has collected a bunch of cases, like hundreds and hundreds of cases. And the hope is that there will be a big settlement out of that that not only rewards money, which can then be used for addiction treatment to a lot of the places that have been affected, but also that pushes back on these pharmaceutical companies, not just the Sacklers and not just Purdue, but just opioid makers in general, and kind of lays the ground rules for advertising and that kind of thing. So this kind of thing can't happen in the future. But at least in the near future, it does look like the Sacklers are going to have to deal with a bunch of these lawsuits and probably are going to have to settle a bunch of them, simply because the effect of this advertising, this push for opioids that has led to the proliferation of painkillers, it really has caused a nationwide crisis. Every single state has seen overdose deaths increase since the 90s, and a lot of that is these painkillers. So until states feel like they have more of a handle on this problem and until people feel like Purdue has properly paid for that, I don't see the lawsuit stopping.
It's interesting you mentioned that the company will be forced to do more treatment centers. In responding to some of the recent lawsuits, Purdue said that the lawsuits were ignoring the fact that the Sackler family has long been committed to initiatives to prevent abuse and addiction, citing a $75 million contribution to the research center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But that was a condition of their settlement of the opioid lawsuit brought by the Oklahoma Attorney General against Purdue. They were forced to do that. Just fascinating. Herman Lopez, senior correspondent for Vox, covering opioid litigation. Herman, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks all for having me.
And at least one member of the Sackler family, Elizabeth, has reportedly called Purdue's role in the opioid crisis morally abhorrent. But another, the late Raymond Sackler, wrote a memo in 2014 pointing out how Purdue had successfully beaten back doctors who wanted to put caps on extended use of OxyContin.